Welcome to the Decisions That Matter podcast, where we meet with leaders from across the procurement community to discuss innovative and strategic ideas. Because when it comes to procurement, every decision matters.
Welcome to Decisions That Matter. I'm your host, Alex Stonehouse, and today with me is Jason Souza. He is the Vice President of the West Coast for Government Sourcing Solutions, also known as GSS. Thanks for joining me today, Jason.
Absolutely.
So obviously I know who you are, and many of our listeners may know who you are, but would you mind giving the folks that don't a little bit of information about your background, about your time in procurement, and sort of how you got to be here with us today?
Sure. Well, like a lot of others kind of my generation, I fell into procurement and fell into it, you know, early 2000s, late 90s, early 2000s, and kind of just fell in love with it. You know, it's a profession that has very tangible benefits. You're solving problems. And, you know, if you can award a contract that saves your citizens $1 million, I mean, that's a very good feeling to have. And so it's a very rewarding profession. And, you know, I stuck with it and took care of Alaska's statewide contracts, participated on a lot of national cooperative contracts with then it was called the Western States Contracting Alliance. And now we know it as NASPO Value Point. And eventually was appointed Chief Procurement Officer for the state of Alaska in 2013. And served in that role. It's a term position, served in that role for 6 years. And, you know, during that time, feel like we made a lot of progress in the state of Alaska, carried on what was already kind of in motion by my predecessor, and, you know, made some other improvements that hopefully, you know, left the state in a better place than when I found it. Yeah, that's kind of my role, or my history. As Chief Procurement Officer, I was also very heavily involved, again, in the National Association of State Procurement Officials. I served on the Board of Directors for a bit, had a lot of involvement in research and innovation, chaired the Emerging Issues Committee. And then in 2018, I was elected as President-elect of NASPO. And so it was really, really a good honor to be recognized at that level as well. So yeah, that's in a nutshell my history in procurement. And then I joined Government Sourcing Solutions in late 2019, and I have really enjoyed staying plugged into procurement around the country, and, you know, getting to talk to all of the great people that are in this profession.
Great. So on the episode today, we're going to jump into a couple different topics, including some of the trends that you've been seeing in your work with GSS in 2021. But actually, we've never, I don't think, talked about it before, but I feel like Alaska must have some really unique procurement challenges, from like getting goods shipped up to Alaska or even just distributing them across the entire state. Like, I think some people don't even realize how like just vastly large Alaska is in general. And what do you think, that's something that is particularly unique to that job? And did you ever have problems finding suppliers for a specific good or service that actually would like deliver to Alaska or do what you needed up there?
Well, you know, I think when you live here, it's just the way of life. You adapt to it, you figure out, you know, again, those problems and how to solve it. And over time, I mean, we've all just kind of adapted being here. We know who ships here, who doesn't, who's going to charge a lot, who's not. And so, you know, there is that kind of environment and just thoughtfulness around you know, the logistics of getting things to and from Alaska. That said, yeah, shipping costs, freight costs are always a matter of negotiation. You know, if we could negotiate it down, if we could include it some way as just, you know, aggregate our volume and try to include freight costs as a value add under a contract, you know, that's what we would always try to do. And, you know, we are a big state, but really a small community. So, you know, our population centers are pretty condensed into, you know, Anchorage, Fairbanks being the big three cities here. But, you know, we do have those rural areas, and getting from one part of the state to another is like getting from Florida to California. So, you know, just everything that you have to deal with in that. You know, one of my favorite very Alaskan procurement stories is there was we have wood bison, so big animals, and there was a program in place to increase the population. And so they did that in at a place south of Anchorage, grew this population and was ready to set them free back into the wild. And they needed to get all of these animals out into southwestern Alaska. And so how to do that? Oh, let's get some contracts in place to load the lighter animals onto airplanes, on the C-130 cargo airplanes. And let's get the heavier ones on trains and trucks. And so, I mean, it's just, you know, ship these animals out into rural Alaska and set them loose. And, you know, all of that is backed by public procurement. And it's just such an interesting thing. And then now, you know, following those animals over the years, it's like, oh, we had, you know, a part in that population of wood bison out in western Alaska. I mean, it's just a crazy thing.
That's so wild. That's one of those stories where when someone asks you like, oh, what do you do as a procurement officer? You're like, do you want the short answer or do you want the full scope? Because there's a lot of different aspects to it. That's great. So as part of your role with Government Sourcing Solutions, historically, you would be out on the road meeting with leaders in states, cities, counties, universities all over the country. That's obviously been a little bit different this year because of the pandemic. A lot of that's being done on the phone or being done over Zoom, but you're still out there kind of with your pulse on what's going on and talking to a lot of different people with some different needs. So what have some of the big trends been that you've been seeing so far in 2020 and that we can kind of anticipate going forward for the rest of the year?
In 2021?
Yeah. Sorry, did I say 2020?
Yeah.
Yeah, 2021.
Yeah,
let's push 2020 behind us.
2021, yeah, I mean, we're fresh into it. And, you know, this time of year, legislative session is, you know, starting for a lot of people. And so that's, you know, kind of front of everyone's mind. And then, you know, whether informed by that or whether informed by 2020, what we just came out of, you know, it sounds like procurement office structure is a big thing kind of on people's minds. We were forced, I mean, really overnight, we went from working in an office to working from home or working, you know, trying to figure out how to create this separation during a pandemic. And so now it's really, you know, looking at what's been going on for nearly a year now and parts of that are going to stick, which parts of it made sense. You know, are we working from home all the time? Are we not? You know, so that seems to be, you know, kind of front of mind for a lot of people. And then, you know, underlying that is still, you know, the base COVID response. Now we're moving into, you know, kind of vaccination distribution, the logistics behind that. So it feels like we've moved from, you know, almost a year ago, it was PPE and ventilators and everything to respond to that initial onset. And now we're in this, you know, kind of, we're moving into this phase now where that's all still important, but, you know, the thing that is a priority, especially as you get down to local levels, counties and cities, is, you know, we have this vaccine, how do we get it out? And, you know, vehicles and equipment and everything associated with that. So yeah, those seem to be the top three things right now is, you know, just dealing with legislative sessions starting in states, procurement structure, and then that kind of next phase of COVID response.
I kind of want to jump into the COVID response part of it right away, if you don't mind. One of the interesting, I saw a really interesting article the other day that there was, I think 49 states signed a part of a federal deal that allowed for distribution of the vaccine through pharmacies. And then West Virginia just said, no, we're good. We'll handle it ourselves and we'll like set up little depots and set up little places and go handle it. Which you'd think, oh, okay, if they're the one outlier, they're probably the ones who are not delivering on it. And it turns out that they're like doing an amazing job, and they're doubling the amount of vaccinations that are being delivered compared to other states, and doing a really amazing job. And I've heard a couple anecdotes recently of procurement folks who have been, similar to the PPE scenario, kind of taken out of their normal role and like put out into a more active position where they're driving boxes of vaccines around and doing some of that actual distribution. Is that something that you think is fairly common beyond like the literal purchase of the vaccines, that people are actually participating in the distribution?
It's really, you know, local government is closest to the people. And so that's where I think you'll see the most of that sort of interaction. But statewide storage of vaccines and distribution to those, you know, local public health clinics or pharmacies, things like that. Yeah, I mean, you're going to see that at a state level, and various involvement. Every state has a different way of reacting to an emergency, and with that, varying degrees of involvement by procurement. So in some jurisdictions, procurement is in there, you know, knee deep in it, people on the ground, driving things around, pulling, you know, things off of shelves to get out. And then in other places, it's, you know, completely taken over by a different agency, and procurement is there as an advisor, and they can, you know, say, hey, you know, we have a contract for that. Did you know that? You know, but they're really kind of cut out of the emergency response process. And then you have everything in between. So, yeah, it's really interesting over the past, during this, you know, 2020-2021 period, to see that really play out. And then that trickle down, you know, into local counties, cities, towns, and how they can respond, and all of that interplay between these different jurisdictions, it's just been really interesting to watch play out. And then, yeah, you see things like one outlier, West Virginia, doing things a little bit differently, and it works. And, you know, you kind of see, you know, is that going to spread? Is that going to go viral? You know, are other people going to take note of that and say, hey, yeah, that works. Let's, you know, incorporate that into how we approach our response. So, yeah, interesting observation here. With the onset of the pandemic, this, you know, kind of clamoring for PPE and ventilators and all of that equipment. And, you know, it was each, you know, kind of government for themselves at one point, you know, and if, you know, you could swipe, you know, an order of masks before anybody else, that was kind of, you know, what you did.
The vibe changes a little bit when the supply drastically is underneath the demand. So I think we're seeing that again a little bit for sure. Like if you can get 100,000 vaccines for your state, you're going to grab them, even if it means you could have split them 50-50 with some other state. It's like, all right, well, that's their problem.
What we're starting to see now is states that were loading up on N95 masks now have surplus. They have too many. They're trying to offload. You know?
Yeah.
Hey, we went out and grabbed millions of these. We don't want to store them. You know, as we found out, they have expiration dates. Does anybody want them? You know, I mean, and so it's funny. I think a lot of it's just kind of human nature. You know, if you see it out there, you know, it's just nature. You want to go and grab it and then, you know, deal with the consequences later, unfortunately, you know.
The ideal world is you have just enough to handle a couple weeks of an emergency, and then you can hopefully buy it once everything dies down. But yeah, it's a fascinating issue. To jump back a step to the sort of environment in procurement offices right now and some of the policies that are changing. One of the things that we saw with the initial pandemic response was sort of the emergency provisions that got passed, and a quick loosening of the procurement rules and laws that allowed people to quickly access money to make purchases almost on the fly, compared to the long like process of approvals and references and all that usually would go into signing a contract. Is that something that you think we're going to look at and say, all right, that was a one-time deal? You get a pandemic once in a century, that's over now, let's go back to the way it was? Or is that something you think people are going to be pushing for, to say, hey, that was really nice, I got to just use my judgment and make a purchase and deal with the consequences. Let's do everything like that. How do you see that sort of shaken out going forward?
Yeah, I think we're going to see some really interesting discussions through these various legislative sessions that are underway now. And a state leadership position, you know, cabinet level, yeah, they got a taste of what it's like to buy what you want when you want it from who you want. And so, you know, that what we saw in those initial phases of COVID response wasn't, nothing there resembled procurement as we know it. That was really, and for good reason, you know, here in Alaska, we have emergency procurement rules. If, you know, there's an emergency and it's, you know, whether a declaration or flood going on, an earthquake, whatever, and it's declared an emergency, we have specific procedures that you can follow that still, you know, point you towards the direction of competition, but, you know, obviously saving public property, saving public life, taking care of the health and welfare of our citizens is priority in those situations. So yeah, now expand that instead of an earthquake that, you know, the response period lasts a month or two as you clean up and repair roads and things like that. Now we're looking at that, you know, expanded over, we're working on 11 months now. And for a variety of things, I mean, CARES Act money came through and you could use it on, it was a pretty broad scope of items that you can use that money on. And combine that with, you know, emergency procedures where you can pick who you want to buy it from. And we want to get this many of that and have it purchased in a phone call or an email or, you know, maybe some very minimal contractual documents. I think going into these sessions, there's going to be talk about, you know, how much of that carries forward, how much of, you know, what has historically been seen as procurement, procedural bureaucracy, people try to chip away at without really understanding why it was there. It's there. Most procurement rules are there for a very good reason because, you know, somebody tried to take advantage of public funds. I mean, that's what we're spending here. And that's why we try to be so incredibly transparent and careful and ethical about how that money is spent. And that's why there are these procedures. And, you know, if somebody sees those as bureaucratic, it's unfortunate because those rules are there for a reason. Does that mean that we can't take another look and review and pull off some of those rules that don't add value? Absolutely. But, you know, I think in government tend to see pendulum swings one way or the other. And that's mostly what I'm curious to see, you know, where that pendulum swings all the way to, hey, we should be able to just buy stuff from whoever all the time, you know, and, you know, where we stick on, let's keep things as is. But I think we are going to see some, you know, streamlining and efficiencies introduced into the public procurement process. And I'm all for that. You know, if we can be thoughtful about it and mindful about what we keep and what we don't keep for something like that, it's pretty exciting, actually.
I think the bureaucratic part of it, it's like, that's also the protective part of it, right? But on this other hand, like, it can be a very time consuming and complex process. So I think you're right. If there's some middle ground where it's like, hey, we take advantage of all the protective components of it, and then, all right, cool. Well, let's still speed up that process to be a month instead of 3 months or 6 months or something like that. I think that's sort of where people would like to get to. So I'm curious. I have a question for you. One of the things, we've done a couple interviews over the last few weeks, and we've heard people say that they were very nervous going into the pandemic that the switch for people, especially who are used to being in a procurement office every single day, that switch to working from home was going to be a really rough transition potentially. But they've all kind of said, I think it's the combination of actually having the technology to do it properly, like Zoom and all that, but also that kind of added pressure of, we need this purchase by this date, like this stuff is urgent and important, we're all working towards a common goal, has actually brought people together. Is that sort of a vibe you've been able to to see on your side when talking with different governments? How have those conversations been going, doing them over the phone? Like, is that connectivity still there? Is it that ability to relate and help them solve their problems still there for you?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. For almost the entire time I was with the state of Alaska, we often would talk about how much of our job as a procurement professional didn't rely on, you know, being in an office every day in the same seat. You know, I mean, it's that problem solving aspect. You know, it's doing research, it's picking up the phone, calling suppliers, it's, you know, doing all of this kind of stuff that really can be done anywhere. And so I do think, you know, there is I agree, you know, the anxiety of, holy cow, how am I going to manage, you know, a team of people, or how am I going to approach my job not being around my team? But once you get over that aspect of it, I think the thing that is missing, I mean, there really is something about in-person, you know, being able to get up and walk to another office or another cubicle, or just ask, you know, kind of out loud, hey, I just ran into this problem. Didn't you have this last week? You know, I think we're missing a little bit of that, but by and large, yeah. I think, you know, procurement specifically was, you know, kind of prepared for something like this. And you know, you mentioned the technology, you know, something like this 15 years ago would have been really tough. I mean, not having great internet connections 15 years ago were an entirely different, you know, magnitude of order of magnitude slower than where we are now. We didn't have, you know, the capability to do video as smoothly as we can now and all of that. So, you know, that's definitely supported. Yeah, I think that procurement offices have settled into, I mean, we've heard in several cases about permanent work from home situations and giving up office space to be used as, you know, communal kind of conference space for all agencies and reducing footprint. And, you know, there is that budgetary aspect to it, but also it's working. People are finding it works. And, you know, I think it's something that's been on the cusp for a long time, you know, especially thinking about government agencies are always looking for ways to increase recruitment and retention of employees. This is kind of, in, you know, a lot of ways can be viewed as a way to retain folks who see this as a benefit. Oh, I can work from a home office. That's great. So it gives that flexibility. So yeah, it's a cool kind of evolution to see, even if it was hurried along by, you know, a pandemic.
We just heard an example the other day of a school district who implemented an e-bidding system like 2 months before the pandemic hit. And they were like, man, that is perfect timing. We're ready to roll. But I think some other places who have been dabbling in it, thinking about doing that kind of move, this was the push where they could now say, all right, now's the time. Like, let's implement that in April, have it ready by June, and let's get rolling on it. Because there's, now we need it. Like, before it was maybe a nice to have. And now it's becoming a must-have.
Especially in government, you get stuck in these, you know, kind of, well, we can't change how we do things. I can't tell you, you know, how many times, you know, as chief procurement officer, I was trying to move us toward electronic signatures. Why are we printing things and signing things and scanning things and keeping things in files? No, we can't do that. Or you know, in some agencies, some person in a leadership position just refused to, you know, sign something electronically. But, you know, March 2020 showed us is that in a day, you can change nearly everything about how you operate. And it's not impossible. I mean, in almost literally overnight, went from working in offices, working at home, we figured out, okay, we're not going to get this signed in person. How are we going to get it signed electronically? I mean, all of these kinds of things, we figured it out, and it in a lot of cases is for the better. It was that nudge to do things a better, more efficient way that leverages the technology that we have now. And I hope, you know, and a lot of it, I hope that that mindset can continue, that some of that sticks, that, you know, when you run into that next roadblock of, oh, you know, we've been doing this for 30 years, we can't change it. Well, maybe we can. You know, we changed everything else overnight in 2020. We can change this overnight, or maybe even take a week. Maybe, you know, be thoughtful about it, but it can be changed and change those things.
In the time that I've worked with you in the past year or two, you've always been like a very kind of forward-thinking guy and coming up with a lot of new ideas and like innovative ways to approach new problems. And you can even hear it when you talk about your time in Alaska. Like there wasn't that status quo of just that is the way it is not something that's really like an acceptable answer. Is there somebody in your career who you've worked with who kind of mentored you or helped you develop that mindset, or who you looked up to as someone who also just sort of lived by that mindset, whether it's in Alaska or some other time in your career?
Yeah, you know, I would say my predecessor, Vern Jones, was a huge influence on me. So he was chief procurement officer for the entire time that I was in public procurement here. And, you know, the biggest thing I took from him was how to be cool in situations that are challenging that, you know, how to stay calm and collected and, you know, really think through something that's coming at you. As a chief procurement officer, I think anybody in procurement, anybody in a procurement leadership position, things come at you all day, every day, and you never know. And that's part of the allure, I think, of the profession is you never know what's going to land on your desk. Are you going to have, you know, how to ship wood bison, you know, across the state? Or are you going to have, you know, a legislator calling with a, you know, 10-year public record request that, you know, you have to figure out? And so, you know, that was something I learned from Vern is, you know, just take these things as they come and deal with them. And you don't have to get stressed out. You don't have to, you know, pull your hair out trying to react, just go with it. And so that really helped me as I took over that seat, took over that role as chief procurement officer. My reaction when the first 100 days, things coming at me was, holy cow, what did I get myself into? And then it's, you know, just slow down. You know, a lot of it is procedure, it's process, it's communication. And, you know, that's really learned from Vern in my time. So he is a big influence. And I would say another Alaskan was a guy here named Sheldon Fisher. He was our commissioner of the division or Department of Administration for a few years. And he challenged me to think way more than I ever thought I needed to think in my life. You know, I would walk into meetings with him thinking I was 100% prepared, and he would poke holes that I would just walk away feeling like, why didn't I have that answer? And so it just over that time working with him, I learned to think of things from these other angles that I hadn't thought of before. You know, you get locked into one kind of way of thinking, especially in procurement, you get kind of procedural and I've seen this before, here's how I would deal with it. But he really introduced kind of that really private sector, really, you know, kind of just outside of government thought process that was kind of foreign to me, having been in government for 15, you know, 16, 17 years at the time. And so that, you know, I really appreciated learning that from him as a leader. So those are probably the two biggest ones that kind of shaped. And, you know, Sheldon also, why can't we change what we're doing? You know, it that was the start of my journey. I am a big fan of Lean and Six Sigma. And he really kicked off that, you know, kind of journey in that path towards, you know, now I have a Six Sigma Black Belt certification. I would not have had that if not for his questioning, you know, and asking why we can't do things better. So a lot of credit there.
Great. Those are both the wonderful answers. And you can definitely tell how much those influences have an impact on your thought process. And it's really cool to see. Thank you so much for joining us here on the podcast. I think people are really going to love this one and get a lot of useful information out of it. So thanks so much for joining me.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to Decisions That Matter. This podcast is brought to you by Procurated, the leading supplier evaluation tool for procurement professionals across the U.S. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you prefer to listen. See you again next time.